Hi, welcome to this edition of Oscar Podcast. I'm Jazz Tanke with awardsdaily.com, sitting down with Phyllis Nagy in Beverly Hills to talk about her latest screenplay, Carol.
And I got to see it last week. No, the week before last.
Right.
It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful. And I've been gushing about it like nonstop. So I want to commend you on that.
Thank you. Yeah, we love it, but you never know that how people might not. So,
but you know what? I think since Cannes, like, there's been a constant buzz and love for it.
Yeah.
And you know, and now people are finally seeing it. Like, my friends were in London.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. Because it's screened at London Film Festival.
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah. And
yeah, we've been it's going to open, and I think that's what we've all been waiting for it to open,
because
it's been a long time since the film was finished. It was finished December of last year, so we've been living with it for a long time.
And now your baby's finally...
Now it's out there. I mean, you know, that special time when it's just yours.
Yeah.
And you can share it with a few people. And it's something really precious.
Yeah.
But the minute it gets out there, I mean, we were nervous wrecks. Because you don't know. I mean, especially at Cannes.
Right.
And the night before, there had been a film that wasn't received at all well. And we thought, we sat there, Todd and I, was like, my God, what if that happens to us? It could.
Right.
You know, there have been some really good films that have not been received well at all by the Cannes. It's a very particular audience.
Yeah.
So that, actually, what they do something that I think is quite mean for filmmakers, which is the press screenings or the day before your premiere. And everyone, you know, tweets the minute they get out.
Yeah.
And we were all having dinner the night before our gala screening, pretending that we weren't looking at the producers, you know, with their phones. And it was just astonishing that one of the producers started crying and she screamed out. And we thought, oh, God, is there, you know, someone die?
Yeah.
And actually, it was the tweets coming out of the first press meeting, which were, if someone had paid me, given me a pen and said, write your own reviews, I would never write some of the things that were coming out. It was great. And then we knew that we would have a great night.
Yeah.
At least we knew that. The next night would be great. And it was.
Well, congratulations. And, you know, I think everybody's who hasn't seen it is really excited for it. Are you following... Do you follow the social media chatter and the reviews?
I try to, because it's, you know, you have to do that.
Yeah.
And you respond to people and you're nice. And it's good to see that people are doing it. But I tend not to read... the reviews, unless they're bad. I mean, if someone sends me a good review, I'll retweet it. But other than scanning the headline, I
stay away from it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of it about. That's all I need to know.
Yeah,
you know, people like it, and then there are the 3.5 people who don't, and those are the ones that I read. Say, oh, yeah. Well, you know what to do with that. You don't necessarily know what to do with praise, except to go, okay. Yeah.
Tell me how it began. It's been a long time.
I was approached by a producer in late 1996. Yeah. And I wrote the first draft of this script. It was probably finished in mid-1997. So it's been that long.
Gosh.
Yeah, I know. I obviously, none of us had any clue it would take this long. Otherwise, we wouldn't have done it. I mean, it's just crazy to stick with it. It's 18 years, right?
What did you use back then? Because this was before Final Draft and...
Yeah, it was. I'm sure, I'm not positive about this, but I'm sure I used Microsoft Word.
Wow.
Which then, by formatting, But Final Draft was at least, I mean, by 1999 or so.
Okay.
There was an early version, because I don't recall writing any other drafts of it without script writing software.
Yeah.
I've always used Final Draft. So, yeah, but it was, and I might have been using, I might have typed it out and then put it into the computer.
Gosh.
At a later stage. It was the ancient days, right? And so, over the years, there would be various people, producing partners, directors who were flirting with it. This was all in the UK, where I lived for a long time. And it was, the development was financed by Film 4.
Right.
In its various guises. David Auchin, I think, was the guy who commissioned
it. Okay,
this.
Yeah.
And then by the time Tessa Ross came aboard, she actually had to buy it back because some interim person had dropped the project. And she came on and bought it back. Anyway, various people would come and go, and I'd have to do little polishes or full drafts or something to accommodate their points of view. And it was a real nightmare at the time, but I'm very grateful for it, because it was like the Carol experience was a complete primer in not only how to write a script, it was the first screenplay I was hired to write, but how to navigate things that have nothing to do with script, but have everything to do with getting a movie made. I mean, there's a difference between writing a script and writing a script that will eventually be produced by someone at a level that is not just me in my backyard with a camera. So I'm very happy I've had that experience, and I never want to replicate it again, having done it once. So it was years and years of waiting around, false starts. There was never any actress attached to the role of Carol. Ever.
At any point.
At any point. And then eventually, what is it? It's almost 2016. Around the end of 2010, I think, the rights to the novel lapsed. The producer lost the rights to the novel. I mean, it had been a long time.
Yeah.
And that meant my script, which was in reversion, and I sort of owned it.
Yeah.
Was dead. I thought that was that. That was the end of Carol. At least in my version of it, anyway. And then about a year later, I got a call from Liz Carlson, who is the principal producer of this, with whom I'd worked before on a movie I wrote and directed for HBO. Actually, I worked with Liz and Christine Vacher on that. But Liz called and said, I've got the rights to Carol, Price of Salt. Could we use your script? I want to make a film of this. I've always wanted this to get made. And I said, gee, no. I was too dispirited by the whole process.
Sure, like, it's...
And plus, there's something, the writer's dirty little secrets, right?
Yeah.
You're a different writer than you were all those years ago. When when you got at the essence of what makes it tick. And I was afraid that I was no longer going to be able to get back into that particular frame of mind, which is all about Therese's point of view.
Yeah.
That young girl who's just coming into her own.
Yeah.
I was no longer there. And it took her a year to convince me to just jump back on the horse and do it again, and it will get made. And finally I said, okay. And, you know, here's the result. So I'm happy that... I'm happy she didn't go out and find some... I think I said to her, you can find a perfectly nice writer to do your adaptation.
But she didn't. She was determined.
Yeah. I don't want a perfectly nice writer. Yeah.
What made you stick at it for 20 years?
Well, partially it's because I felt a debt to Pat Highsmith, whom was a friend of mine through the last decade of her life.
Right.
This came to me as a job 2 years after she died, so she wasn't aware of it.
Right.
But we spoke about that book a little bit when she republished it under her own name and changed the title. And so I knew it was a deeply personal to her, this book, in a way that the other books were not.
Yeah.
And so I was actually scared to read it for a long time. So I thought, well, I don't want to offend her. I don't want to seem stupid. If I identify with Therese, and actually it's Carol she wants me to.
Right.
That was a young person's response to being intimidated by, you know, the quite tricky, older, very successful writer. But I wish I had read it when she was still alive. I read it when she died, in 95. But,
yeah.
And I knew then that this was a radical, deeply psychologically compelling work of fiction that wasn't at all what I expected it to be. And deceptively, the book is deceptively plain. The speech is plain. The language she uses is plain.
Yeah,
it's
totally
packing quite a wallop. And when I was asked to adapt it, I said yes.
Yeah.
And then thought, oh no, what do I do with this? It doesn't seem to suit an interesting adaptation. I mean, it immediately suited a certain kind of adaptation that I really personally despise, which would be a very literary adaptation with lots of voiceover and lots of, because of the strange shifting third person, but then all of a sudden it's Therese's point of view.
Right.
But I knew I didn't want to do that. Not for this. It didn't. You seemed to me you needed to be immersed in that love story, but then there were so many other problems temporarily that worked in the novel, but not for a dramatic structure. So it took me a little while to figure it out. And once I stopped being afraid of Pat's ghost, you know, God, would she like this? Because she didn't like her. She didn't like the films people made of her books.
That's interesting.
At all. But I understood that.
Yeah.
Because most of the great films of her books fundamentally change the nature of those books. Strangers on a Train.
Yeah.
Great film. I remember, you know, foolishly saying, oh, I love Strangers on a Train. Really? It's like, well, yeah, it's a great film. They actually trade murders in my book. And I said, oh, of course I knew that, but I'd forgotten, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but stuff like that. Plein Soleil is, reduces that, you know, Ripley, it's a heterosexual love triangle, isn't it?
Right.
She quite liked aspects of certain things, but she was quite harsh on everything else that I know that she saw, some she didn't see.
Yeah.
Of course I was worried about that.
Yeah.
What would she like about this? And then I realized once we were actually making this film, she would have loved this style and Kate.
Exquisite.
She loved Kate. And Rooney as her alter ego. She would like that too. If she had any issue, otherwise she could have yelled at me. But I think that the thing that it does is preserve the things that are important in that book, which is a lack of banal psychologizing about its character sexualities. All the women do not have doubts about their sexuality. There are lots of other things that are going on.
Yeah.
And external forces brought to bear on them, but not that. And each of them, the three women, arguably, each present a different shading of how these lesbians are dealing in the world. Absolutely fascinating. And also her take on what makes a good mother. Completely radical in 1952.
Right.
Still radical today.
Yeah.
That a woman would make, I don't want to give a spoiler, but the choices that Carol has to make are actually deeply sophisticated, let's say, and radical. We have not had any brushback against that, which I think is a testament to the power of the filmmaking and the performances.
And your script, of course.
Well, you know, that too. But it could have been, you know, there are a million ways to do that. And it could have been disastrous. It could have been a melodramatic blur in certain hands.
I think if you, like, you know, if you've not read the book and you're watching the film, you think she's going to make the decision you're not expecting.
Yeah.
Because of when it's set.
Yeah.
So when I'm trying not to give away spoilers either.
Yeah.
So when she does,
But then it seems perfectly natural that she does in the film.
Yeah.
Down to, you know, the exquisite. It's a fine line, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
You can overplay it, and then that makes people like me go away. Or you can severely underplay it, and you don't care. But both she and Kyle, I think, in that scene are just heartbreaking. I'll leave it at that.
So, how many drafts did you actually end up doing?
Yeah. Before we actually had a film, right? Four major drafts. And a handful of, I think between 5 and 7 polishes, revises, that were never called drafts.
Yeah.
For various reasons. But they were the work of drafts sometimes and sometimes not. When Todd came on, I mean, of course I was terrified because, we didn't know if he would do it because he usually writes his own stuff, and he'd never done this.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had writing partners before, but he's never come on to something. And so part of the discussion was, you know, could we?
Yeah.
And from the very first discussion, I realized that he was completely simpatico with the things that were really important to me.
Yeah.
And I think I put him at ease by saying, look, I've been with this for so many years. I'm not precious about it at all. I just want it to work.
Yeah.
And basically I can handle anything. And he told me what he thought. He had a particular interest in a certain kind of framing device, which is, again, without giving it, the framing device of the film.
Yeah.
It's in the film, inspired by classic love stories. In particular, Brief Encounter has this sort of device.
Sure.
Right. So I went back and did that, and certain other things. It was a joy because I was allowed to restore the ellipticism of earlier drafts of the script.
Yeah.
The silences, you know, all those scenes that usually are the first things that people ask you to take out.
Yeah.
Observe behavior. Why is that important? Why is that car drive important? It's like, because it is. When you shoot it,
yeah.
It will be. You know, get someone great, and it will be something. He, of course, is all interested in all of that. And so, you know, we worked very quickly to come up with, like, a fifth draft. And that was it. I mean, on the set, I was there, I did a few things because of, you know, drop locations or things at the last minute. That, and he was very much more protective of the script than I was. So I became the, yeah, it's okay. You can get rid of that. And you could combine this here. And that will still work.
Yeah.
So I was glad to be there for that. And also, just little things that come up. Kate and things that people miss or just work. And it was a really great experience that I can't speak for Todd, but I think he would say the same thing.
Yeah, because I was going to say, how much involvement did you have when it came to the actual filming?
Well, I was there. I mean, like, I didn't want to be there. They were filming for 7 weeks, and I was there for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I chose the period of time in which I thought any practical things or issues would come up. So I was there for all the scenes that involved the characters that Kyle and Abby, Sarah Paulson, play.
Yeah.
Interacting with the other two. I was there for the end. You know, that final
moment.
Sequence.
Yes.
Yeah. And lots of other things like that. I wasn't there for any of the young men's scenes, but pretty much, I thought if anything came up, it would come up with those four.
Yeah.
And that was a good decision. It was also freezing in Cincinnati. It was like...
Really? It didn't look it at all, like on film.
Well, but I was marveling. I mean, there's that scene in the movie where the husband goes to visit Abby at night. And she's wearing nothing. She's wearing her robe.
Yeah.
And he's standing there without a hat and everything. It was so cold that all of us were out in Video Village with icicles practically forming.
Oh, my God.
Scarves, hats, perfect. How do actors do that? I have to remember to ask. Is there like a class they take in how not to shiver when it is, you know, 10 degrees?
I'll ask Sarah to be.
You ask her. Because I was there that night and I thought, how are they doing this? I know there are lights on them, but honestly, it's an exterior scene.
Right.
Basically.
And if it's like minus 20,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All the lights aren't really going to.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just they're in the moment. They don't notice. Yeah.
And that final scene, that sequence, was beautiful. Like the silence, just the shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's extraordinary. And it was one of those, I mean, I didn't worry about it because Todd was doing it. But it's one of those, you know, endings are important. And I remember writing that because the book ends very much like that. And I thought, this could end up being, I imagined all the different terrible versions of it in my mind, with the gauzy curtains blowing in the back of the restaurant, and the sort of over-reliance on slow-mo, and...
Right.
Please, God. This, if you can actually nail that, you've got something here. And, of course, I didn't worry about Todd doing that, but even so, watching it, I thought, this is going to be something that even I will be surprised by when I watch it after 18 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty stunning,
but
aren't
they? So I think in the book, Carol's character, she's a bit of a tough one.
She's kind of shadowy and prickly, and we preserved as much of that, you know, as we could. She's a bit melancholic, a bit of a depressive, isn't she?
But she's
strange.
Got a soft edge in the film.
Mm-hmm. A little bit of a softer one. I mean, obviously she has it in the book, too.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I could see Pat in all of this, that she had she was a very tough, difficult, prickly person.
Yeah.
But then would go out of her way to make someone feel at home. And I saw that duality in Carol.
Yeah.
What the gift that she gave me as an adapter was in not actually describing any of those big moments with Carol. Like, they're all related to Therese. Or I heard the custody battle didn't go well, or, you know, something like that. And so that gives you a great license to invent a real life for her.
Yeah.
So my only caveat to the producers early on, way back when, was I don't want this to be a movie about a child. This is not Kramer versus Kramer for lesbians.
Yeah.
I don't want the child to be too present. You know, all of these. This is not a movie about a child.
So
all of those things that could easily kind of start creeping in don't want the men to be. The men in the book are quite blunt and quite, for me, unrealistic. I thought, well, Carol is married to this guy for quite a while.
Yeah.
And really, he's a product of his times, and I'm sure that's what Pat intended to do, but every time she put dialogue in his mouth, it was wrong. She was the first to admit that she didn't know how to write dialogue. She was a novelist.
Yeah, right. You know? She could write the story, but not.
Right. So that had to be dealt with. And there were quite a few arguments I had with other people involved, who are not involved with this film, over the years about, no, those men have to be, you have to reserve empathy for them. You do not have to like them, but they are human. You have to keep shifting that perspective. So one moment, you know, he's a little drunk and he's being, you know, manhandled Carol in the way that actually people did in those days. They still do. And in the next moment, he can really make you see that he is driven by love as he understands it. That moment where Kyle Chandler says, "How do you know my wife?" is one of my favorite moments. It is his delivery.
Right.
But in a tiny little nuanced delivery, he conveys the emotional world of that guy. Same thing with, I feel sorry for Richard. I mean, he's just who he is. He's not expecting his personal property to go off and take a road trip with a stranger. I mean,
that she's just met, right?
I too might have a problem with that. So, in the writing of it, it became crucial not to. It sounds like a cliche, but it is actually true. Not to judge a single moment of behavior in any way.
Yeah.
If somebody in making the film later on wants to judge that behavior, I can't do anything about that. But luckily, that didn't happen. So I think men are actually responding pretty well to this, not just gay men.
Well,
a lot of older men.
Yeah.
A lot of, I don't know about the 18-year-olds, but we're not having people reject it as a woman's movie, which one old guy at a screening came up to me and said, "No, I gotta tell you, I turned about 10 minutes in, I said to the wife, 'Oh, it's a woman's movie.' But by the end, I was blown away. I was bawling right along with her." And I thought, okay, good. We can have something maybe here.
There's a lot of appeal.
Yeah, for some, I mean, you know, again, I'm biased, we're all biased, we love the film, but you just really don't know how it's being received by people. And critics are one thing, but
people.
The people, the, you know, audiences who actually pay money and expect to be entertained or moved in some way, you never know.
Well, I actually, on that note, I did actually tweet and said, you know, at some point saying I was going to be interviewing you and Sarah, and the one thing that they wanted me to let you know, and these are like young girls maybe having identity issues. Mm. They shouldn't be. I mean, you know, your sexuality shouldn't be an issue in 2015. Saying, you know, just to thank you for actually writing the story and sticking with it.
Yeah. Well, that's been the hard thing over the years, but it's a testament to this group of producers and collaborators that they never wanted it to be something, and also to the distributor. I mean, nobody, as far as I know, interfered with it, which is sort of like a fairy tale, isn't it? But, I mean, I'm sure, like, the book remains a very useful, a touchstone for a lot of young women when they're coming out. Because, you know, it doesn't end in tragedy. It ends on a cautiously, elliptically optimistic moment. I mean, maybe they go home that night and decide it ain't going to work out. But in that moment.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's really what's important. So I hope the movie helps. And, you know, we're in L.A. and New York and basically places like this.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of places, I think, still in the States where women, gays, minorities of every kind have a tough time. And social media exacerbates and helps the tough time. Because you can see, there's another world.
Connect.
There's another way of connection. But we're not there. We're in some awful conservative community.
Yeah.
Or we're dealing with the Christian right, or in other parts of the world, fundamentalism, you know?
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're sitting here saying, oh, good job, but really, there's another fight out there that we're not fighting, but I hope the film can reach people like that.
It is an exquisite film. I think it's actually a masterpiece. So.
Oh, wow.
I do want to commend you and the team.
I will tell Todd that too.
Please do.
I will,
because,
absolutely.
Yeah. Did you leave much out from the book on? I haven't finished the book, so.
Yeah, actually a surprising amount, and so I feared that the fan base of the book, you know, would like come after me, but no.
They've reacted positively.
Very well, so far. I mean, again, I'm sure people can take issue with whatever they want to take issue with. I understand that. But I would say to them, write your own adaptation. See how much you can fit in that favorite part from, or that character, or you can't. Not in 2 hours.
It didn't even feel like a 2 hour film. I just wanted it to go on. I didn't want it to end.
Oh, wow. I've heard that before, that people just wished it didn't end. Not that it didn't end there, but that we continued, and, you know, that's what a lovely idea.
Because it's at the end of the day, it's a really nice love story as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, in the 1990s, you had a lot of romantic comedies and just, like, really good
This is like, just an adult drama that isn't demanding that you pay attention to its agenda. It doesn't really have an agenda except putting forth the proposition that love, this is love.
And also it has two women at the heart of it. That's what's making it absolutely magical.
Yeah. But they're not calling attention to it. I mean, the film does not call attention to it.
It's not about them.
It's like, I can imagine this being made in the 50s or the 40s in a certain way when you had actresses like Betty Davis or Gloria Swanson, God knows. And but it's made in that way. Not to say that it looks like it was made then, it doesn't, but there's a seriousness and an assumption that audiences are just interested in observing the behavior of adult people, and they don't need an excuse for it, or they don't need to identify in a particular way with it in order to like it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it has its constituency audience, of course, which I hope, you know, powers a nice box office, but you don't need to be gay to appreciate it.
Absolutely. I think it'll transcend.
I hope so. I really do, because I think there's a lot of people, like, you know, members of my family that should see a movie like this. Not my parents, but extended family, you know. All right.
Have your parents seen it?
No, not yet. No, they haven't.
They need to.
They're not in the same... I don't know when. It's going to get to them soon, because they live on Long Island. So,
okay.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you
Thank
so
you.
Much.
It's a pleasure.